And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin on this Wednesday, March 23rd, and I'm very happy to hear my buddy, my partner, my friend, my colleague, Arpin Basu. Hello, Arpin. Welcome back.
Hey, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm back.
There you are.
Yeah, I'm back in town, trying to get back in the swing of things. Gotta say, in my whole career, well, maybe not my entire career covering the Canadiens, but for at least the last 10 to 15 years of it, I've never been away from the team and like tuned out of the team in the middle of a season for as long as I have, the way I have the last 3 weeks, obviously dealing with the death of my dad and going to India and that whole emotional roller coaster that I've been through. Obviously, the Canadiens were not a big priority for me over that time. So coming in fresh, you know, it's really actually interesting. And I think, you know, a little preview for what I plan on doing for my first game back on Thursday. But it's since I've never had this experience of being away from the team for so long, I feel like there's going to be some sort of benefit to it where I can get like a fresh perspective on what I see. And so I'm looking forward to the game on Thursday, which will be the first game I will have seen. Although I caught bits and pieces of the game on Monday, but I really wasn't paying that much attention to it. We had just arrived. So it'll be an interesting exercise. But all that to say that I was watching all the moves that happened kind of from afar. I was traveling on trade deadline day, flying from Kolkata to Doha, racing to the next flight, getting on a, you know, another 12 or 13 hour flight from Doha to Montreal and just dealing with a whole bunch of stuff with my mom on my return. So I have a totally fresh perspective on what happened on deadline day and what the teams look like. So I haven't seen them in a while. So it's going to be interesting, but you know, let's dive into the deadline. Cause really,
yeah. Cause it's funny. Cause you said, oh, I tuned out in a way that, you know, I had never done before. And at a crucial time, but when we spoke, you and I, yesterday, and we started talking about how it was a good move for the Rangers to go after Tyler Motte and Andrew Kopp, You seem pretty up to date. You came back, you got yourself up to speed pretty quickly there.
Yeah. I did a lot of catching up on Monday. But you know, there were a few news that I had missed. But you know, I tried as best as I could to get as fully caught up as I can. And obviously on the Canadiens moves, you know, I saw all of them and, pretty remarkable, what Ken Hughes and Jeff Gorton were able to do, how they were able to set their own market for their own players, and pretty funny on a team that's like such a bottom dweller to have so many players that's teams coveted so badly, like Brett Kulak, like who knew,
man.
Like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's, and good for Brett. Like I'm, you know, he's from the Edmonton area. And so he's kind of going home in a way, a second time playing for an Alberta team, this time his hometown team. But you know, the price on Brett Kulak, the price obviously on Ben Chiarot, which everyone lost their mind over. But I think, I really do think that when people see Ben Chiarot play for the Panthers in the playoffs, you know, on a defense that already had Radko Gudas, and now you add Ben Chiarot to that mix, and it's really, those are two mean dudes that are going to be, that are most effective when they play the same people over and over and over again. And the frustration can just kind of layer on those players. I mean, just ask Austin Matthews how he feels about Ben Chiarot, you know, after the fourth game against him, he just became sort of less and less effective, you know? So I think the Panthers got kind of ripped for the price on that. And I don't think it was entirely justified, but it's, you know, this treasure chest of draft picks the Canadiens now have, when coming off, you know, 4 years where they've picked, you know, they've made more draft picks than almost ever before over a 4 year span. And now they're here with this huge war chest of picks. And I got to say, like, you know, bravo to Jeff Gorton and Ken Hughes. They managed it quite well. And they did have a certain advantage, like especially when it comes to Lehkonen and Kulak, in the sense that they didn't feel the obligation to trade them, no. Which I think played into their hands and got them the pieces that they wanted. So, but you know, for a rookie GM, I know Jeff Gorton's got a ton of experience, but for a rookie GM, Ken Hughes handled himself pretty well, I think.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And yeah, with 14 picks in the upcoming draft, that's it's funny because Marc Bergevin previously had focused on getting a lot of picks for a period of 2 to 3 years. And it seemed as though heading into last year that movement would have been over. And so they manufactured a lot of draft picks very quickly. And why don't we just, I think the best way to go about it would be to go from one trade to another. Let's start with Ben Chiarot. I mean, you mentioned the fact that the Panthers were sort of ripped for the price that they paid. I think that this is really a case where, you know, the eye test and the advanced stats really collide significantly when it comes to Ben Chiarot, because we have, I mean, all sorts of data and measuring tools indicate that Chiarot is not a good defenseman. But I think, you know, as much as I respect advanced stats and I pay attention to them, I mean, this is really a case where it shows you the limits of what they mean, and or it shows you the limit of what the information that's publicly available can enable you in the current models to conclude in terms of you know, of performance or come up to certain conclusions regarding players, because I suspect that within teams, the sort of information that they're able to gather on their own players, on opposing teams, and even for private companies like SportsLogic, there's a lot more information that if you dug into this, you would probably arrive to a different conclusion when it comes to Ben Chiarot than what's been circulating out there, you know, mainly on social media, because there is such a big clash. And of course, if you look at, if there's a similar red flag that's been raised regarding Rasmus Ristolainen for the last couple of years. He just signed a very big contract with the Flyers, a contract extension. But when it comes to Chiarot, I mean, to me, it would have been unlikely that they would have been able to get less than a first. But now they got a first-round pick. They got a guy in Tyus Mihalyniuk that, had he not been injured in his draft year, there's a good chance that he would have been taken in the second round. He was probably more a second-round talent that year. And they've got a fourth-round pick to boot, you know, in 2022. And the first-round pick is for 2023.
Yeah.
So, which
more
is awesome.
Valuable, which is more valuable than a 2022 first-round pick. And so, even though, you know, it'll be in this, you know, it'll be in the second half of the first round, if not in the later parts of the first round, because that Florida team looks like it's going to be good for a while. But
yeah,
but just to get back to Ben Sherrod, and I think this is what's interesting about players like him, and there are many of them. You mentioned Ristolainen, Josh Manson's another one that the numbers aren't very kind to, and he got brought back a pretty decent haul for the Anaheim Ducks from the Avalanche. It's this whole notion that, you know, hockey's not the only sport. Basketball is also played, you know, is officiated differently and played differently in the playoffs than it is in the regular season. But there's no more drastic a shift in any sport than there is a shift between regular season hockey and playoff hockey. And frankly, you know, one of Dominique Ducharme's favorite things, his four stages of the season thing, is really quite accurate. You know, it's really like the beginning of the season. It's this loosey-goosey kind of whatever, open play and lots of goals. And then slowly it just tightens up as the season goes along. And it's really stage three and four where players like Ben Sherratt thrive. And as poorly, and like when you mentioned the eye test versus analytics, like, let's be honest, there are times when the eye test was not kind to Ben Sherratt either in the regular season. There were when he was paired with Shea Weber. Yes, they were phenomenal in the playoffs, but there were months, like months at a time when they were just awful in the regular season with the Canadiens. And so it's not only eye test versus data, but it's just the recognition that the style of play in the playoffs suits certain players better than others. You know, the loosening or the, I guess, yeah, the loosening of the rules, letting more things go, cross-checking becoming an acceptable form of defense. Like there's lots of things that suit Ben Sherratt's game come playoff time. And honestly, credit to Mark Bergevin. This is something that he embraced quite early, like actually literally when he signed Ben Sherratt as a free agent and then doubled down on it by signing Edmondson the year after. And this is something that he understood and really made a central tenet almost of how he was going to build his team. You know, getting Corey Perry in the offseason was kind of like a nod to like, we need a guy like that in the playoffs. And look how well he did in the playoffs last year. So the Panthers probably saw all those games where Ben Sherratt was awful, including this season. Like, listen, there were times this season when, you know, he takes a lot of penalties, but that's less of a thing in the playoffs, you know? I mean, but in the regular season, his penalty differential is among the worst in the league, and he puts your team on the penalty kill a lot. There are a lot of things that to not like about Ben Sherratt if you're looking at it from afar. And the Panthers have probably seen all those things. But quite honestly, I think the one evaluation the Panthers made on this trade was, we want the Ben Sherratt we saw in the playoffs last year. That's the guy we want. And that's the guy they're probably going to get.
That's the guy they need.
And so they paid the price to get that guy. And I have no problem with it. Like it's, I mean, good on the Canadiens. I think they were going to get a first round pick anyway. If it wasn't Florida, probably would have been St. Louis. Well, I don't know about St. Louis, but there was a team out there willing to pay that price. The extra stuff that they got, really does make it a home run in terms of how the Canadiens handled it and you know, and really setting the market for defensemen. I think there are several other selling GMs around the league that owe Ken Hughes and Jeff Gorton an ode of gratitude here for setting such a high bar for what a defenseman's going to cost. And the Smolanic kid, and I noticed in the notebook that you wrote that has my name in the headline and I had nothing to do with, you talked to his coach. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is one thing I noticed while I was in India, but he played with each of Jeff Gorton's, Ken Hughes, and Martin St. Louis' sons at one point or another. Am I wrong in saying that? I believe that's the case.
I don't know about Gorton.
I saw somewhere that he had played with all three of their sons. That might be wrong, but right. In any case. So it got me wondering, like, I mean, are the Canadians going to start like...
a familiarity thing going on there because, I mean, Quinnipiac played Northeastern two or three times this year, and Kent Hughes attended those games. So he knows him. He has scouted him personally. So I would assume that he went back to the prospect book that they've got, yeah. You know, on guys from previous drafts and probably vetted that with his scouting staff. But right. he had himself a high opinion of the player. So, right.
And when I said with, I meant like with meaning against. I don't think he actually played. I don't think he actually played with them necessarily, mm-hmm. but he played in the same league as them. You know,
right.
I think that was my understanding. So
yes.
So yeah. Interesting, great return, and great to pull the trigger, you know, 5 days before the deadline. Was just a great way to kind of kick off the trade deadline period, I guess. And the Canadians really taking the driver's seat there. And Florida's interest in Ben Chiarot was clear from the very beginning, like from the start of the season. It was obvious that Florida had targeted him as the guy they wanted, and we're willing to do what it took to get him. And I think as time went on, it had become unclear how much value Ben Chiarot had on the market, just because of how the market was flooded with defensemen, but they weren't flooded with defensemen like him. That was the one advantage the Canadians had, is that this profile of defenseman, this specific kind of guy who thrives in a playoff environment, a net clearer, a nasty presence in your own end, a guy that makes people think twice about going to certain areas of the ice. And as I mentioned, when you're playing the same guy over and over again, that can have an impact as the series goes along, which we saw, I think, quite clearly in the Toronto series, and even in the Winnipeg series to some extent. And so it was still good to get out ahead of it. Like there was some risk to keeping Ben Chiarot until March 21st. Because who knows what happens at that point? You might get stuck, you know, holding, you know, you might get stuck without a chair, as you like to say so often. And so it's a good move. I think it's really, really, really kind of shrewd and getting exactly the price that they wanted for this guy, is pretty well done.
Yeah, there was the reaction I felt from the fans is that they were a lot happier with the return that the Canadians got for Chiarot than for Tyler Toffoli, a move made a few weeks before. But it's
right.
Such a different market at the same time. You look around and I mean, the number of players that have any sort of term on their contract, but even more so 2 years left on their contract. There's only one guy at the trade deadline that was traded and had 2 years left on his deal, and that's Brendan Hagel.
Yeah, who has one of the best contracts in the NHL. I mean, it's really
well there you go. So yeah. I mean, he's 23 years old. He's already he already has 21 goals. He's signed for two more years at $1.5 million. So of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning, being the Tampa Bay Lightning, they paid a premium price to get the guy because he's on a great contract. But there's otherwise, it shows you how guys with term, it was an issue to move those guys. And
yeah.
Tyler Toffoli ended up being the only one in the market to be moved. And my read on that situation, and that's why I'm not really ready to say, oh, the Canadians didn't get enough for him. They should have looked at what other guys went for. Well, it's extremely difficult during the season to move guys with term. And Tyler Toffoli just had a career year with the Montreal Canadiens last season. And the Canadiens could not expect that things would change so drastically under Martin Saint-Louis. But they need, if they wanted to capitalize on the fact that his value was at an all-time high, that was the right time to do it.
Yeah. And I had no problem with the return they got for the very thing that you just mentioned, is that the other years on Toffoli's contract, which should be seen as a valuable thing, that you're getting multiple years of this guy at a number that's very reasonable at 4.25. The fact is that there weren't that many teams who could absorb that for various reasons, because either they have young players' contracts coming up that they're going to need to pay, all sorts of things, all sorts of factors. They have a bunch of other UFAs on their team, and they don't know how the money's going to work. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why teams couldn't get in on that. And so with the limited number of teams they were working with, and it's really, I don't think it's a stretch to say you could count on one hand the number of teams who were willing to pay a price that the Canadians would be willing to accept for Tyler Toffoli. So when you're working with such a limited pool, getting the return that they got shouldn't be knocked. And it doesn't, it's apples and oranges with Ben Chiarot. It's totally apples and oranges. It's not the same thing at all. And so I have no problem with either. Well, I mean, they got a first round pick in both trades. And so that was the goal. And then they go out and get a former first round pick for Arturi Lehkonen. So really, they got three first-round picks. So it's quite something.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Justin Barron is a guy who ticks so many boxes for the Canadians. Kent Hughes told us that, yes, he wanted to get some more draft picks, but ideally, if he was able to get some prospects that would accelerate the whatever of the Canadians, he would go rather for prospects. And this is a guy, I mean, he's 20 years old, so he's going to play some games with the Canadians this year. They're going to assess his development. I'd be surprised if he stayed. I think that eventually he's going to be sent down, but who knows? We'll see. We'll see how he fares with this in this environment. But as a very mobile right-handed shot on the blue line, and he comes in and it fits really where they're going, where they're at, and he's going to be like a righty equivalent to many guys that they've got on the left side of their defense. And to me, the fact that he played alongside Caden Gooley at the World Juniors is just the icing on the cake. Caden Gooley was one of the first people to text him when he got traded and say, hey, that's great that you're coming in this organization. We'll probably be linemates at some point.
Yeah,
exactly.
We'll probably be partners.
So that might be, you know, in the medium term, the second pairing of on this team, and that's great. So you, as much as you were referring to the fact that Marc Bergevin had been looking for a mean, big, and rugged brand of defenseman in order to get to the playoffs and be effective in the playoffs, but now when you look at the types of defensemen that the Canadians now have, the younger ones. Whether it's Gooley can be mean, there's no doubt about that. But I mean,
he's an excellent skater, though.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that you get now a lot more good skaters on the blue line. I guess that was my point, and that's so having Justin Barron there is great, and that's really a situation I think where the market for Lehkonen was also at an all time high, and they had to capitalize on that.
Yeah, and the interesting thing on Lehkonen is that there was somewhat of the same dynamic there was with Toffoli. He's not signed, but he is under team control for one more year. He is an RFA, but he has arb rights. He's in the process of having a career-best season. You know, we've often mentioned how the Arbrights shouldn't scare anyone because Arturi Lehkonen doesn't really have the offensive numbers to make a strong case in arbitration to get a big payday. Now
it's not true anymore.
Now all of a sudden he kind of does, you know? And so in Colorado's case, you know, I think some of the same dynamic that might have limited the market with Toffoli probably had some teams concerned about acquiring Lehkonen because, yes, you're getting him for an extra year, or if you can get him to sign long term, then power, you know, then all that much better because he's just a really good player. You know, I mean, he's just a guy who would fit in on any team and any coach would love to have him. Just really versatile and responsible and you know, able to do a lot of the things that gets the puck back for your team, you know, which is a really valuable skill to have. And so, but despite the fact that he could, if it gets to arbitration, ask for a decent raise, a raise that would maybe get him in the same neighborhood as the unfortunate Joel Armia contract in Montreal right now, in the mid threes, they were still able to get a first round prospect and a second round pick, even though it's in 2024, but still, they got in both those trades, in the Toffoli trade and the Lehkonen trade, basically first round picks. And so again, they set a price and it was met. And so it really bodes well for what the Canadiens hope to achieve if this is what they keep doing. I know this is a very small sample right now, but like in every case, the Canadiens set their price and had it met. You know, I mean, I don't know to what extent they set a price on Andrew Hammond, but the fact that they got anything in return, it's quite remarkable. I mean, they basically traded Brandon Baddock for Nathan Schnarr, who I believe played with Nick Suzuki in Guelph,
yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
They did. They
yeah.
did.
So
Schnarr finished that season, his 20-year-old season, I think with 102 points in 60-something games. So they know each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And that I think he was on that team that made that run to the Memorial Cup. And so the Memorial Cup final, I should say, or the Memorial Cup tournament.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, acquiring a useful asset for Andrew Hammond. I don't really know how they did that. I don't even know. I mean, the New Jersey Devils have had goaltending issues and injuries sorts of things. It's been worse than Montreal, frankly. I mean, it's just been a nightmare for them. So I get them wanting a goalie, but you know, it's not as if Nate Schnarr really moves the needle in any significant way. You know, he's an AHL player. I was just stunned to see that they were able to trade Andrew Hammond. Andrew Hammond gets traded twice in the span of a few weeks or a couple or a month or so. Who would have thought that Andrew Hammond would be in the news twice in a month after going like totally dark for like ever since the Hamburglar days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, but I mean, two things on that. When a few days before the deadline, during a media availability, Kent Hughes mentioned the fact that he would be looking for help for the Rocket. Uh-huh. So it's for the, you know, it just thinking about the push for the playoffs and once the playoffs have started. So Nate Schnarr might not move the needle for the Canadiens, but for the Rocket, it does.
Oh, yeah,
so
sure.
So I think that's one thing that's really interesting. And the other one is, and that's probably a good sign, the sort of little detail that might catch the attention of some players around the league, is how the new Canadiens front office treat their players. And when you are willing or you're interested in accommodating a player like Andrew Hammond, knowing full well that with Carey Price coming back, Allen playing out of his mind right now and being fully healthy and having a decent backup in Samuel Montembeau, he would not be playing anymore. So he's worthy of a chance to continue his NHL career, and Kent Hughes wanted to give him that. And he found the right team for that. The Devils have already used six goalies. So once he plays, he's going to be the seventh goalie for that team this year. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So, and that's a good point. I think that's the kind of stuff that players do notice when a team goes out of its way to try and accommodate a player and can give a player an opportunity somewhere else and not hoard them. you know, for depth or whatever, that is something that does get noticed. And so, so good on them for making that happen. And it's a win-win. Obviously the Devils need them and the Canadians could use some help in Laval to try and get them into the playoffs. And, you know, frankly, they'll probably get Justin Barron in Laval at some point too. I mean, even if he plays well in Montreal and even if he finishes the season in Montreal, he'll still probably go play in the playoffs in Laval, assuming they make it. So
yeah, he was among the players who were papered and made available for the playoffs. So he's going to join the Rocket after the season for sure.
Yeah. Which leads us to the cherry on the sundae for deadline day, Brett Kulak. I gotta say, man, like it's. I know that people were probably a little shocked at what Edmonton gave up to get him, but good on them, you know, because I really feel Brett Kulak is, you know, he's kind of the anti Ben Chiarot, right? He's the guy whose numbers are awesome, but kind of leaves you wanting sometimes, and like, you know, intensity can kind of wane. And but really, when you look at the overall picture on Brett Kulak, he really, you know, he was more good than bad. I feel he had bad moments, but really had long stretches where he was quite effective, especially in a more limited role, which is, you know, which should be what he plays in Edmonton. Good pickup for them, I think. Like that's a really a good guy to have, a guy who can play higher up in the lineup if you need it. But really a guy who can move the puck and get the puck moving in the right direction on one of your lower, you know, on your bottom pair, is a good asset and really is worth what they gave up. You know, I think the seventh round pick was for the money retention. I'm guessing a 2024 seventh round pick. Like, does it get more inconsequential than that? Like 2 years down the road, last round of the draft. But you know, the second round pick, and I guess William Lagesson, just to kind of make the money work even more, I suppose, or just to take up Brett Kulak's spot in the lineup, is another big win. And I'm just curious. Listen, this is how cold I'm coming in. I didn't even listen to Ken Hughes's avail. Did anyone broach the subject of what kind of market existed for Brett Kulak? I do know he came out and said that he had no interest in trading Brett Kulak.
Yeah, well, actually, he could not discuss the Brett Kulak trade because it had not gone through Central Registry at the time that he was made available.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he said, I didn't want to, you know, make you guys wait any longer, so that's why I'm coming, but I cannot address the Brett Kulak deal just yet. Okay. So this is going to be for another day. But I mean, look, I know that the Oilers had been interested in Brett Kulak, and I see two things. First, the fact that the Canadians were able to get a second round pick for him to me is a major coup. I thought that the Canadians would have to settle, you know, just based on how the market was last year. When you think of a guy like Dmitry Kulikov, who went for a fourth round pick, I thought, okay, well, that's probably what the Canadians are going to get. It could be a third round pick too, but a second, it would be a stretch. And that's something that Ken Holland mentioned when he commented on Kulak's acquisition. He said that the fact that Jeremy Lauzon went from Seattle to Nashville for a second round pick sort of contributed also to raise the prices even more. So he had to be ready to pay that price for Kulak because that's what the Canadians were really looking for. And obviously, they must have, along the way, what looked as though an overflow of defensemen and a buyer's market ended up being a seller's market. Mm-hmm. And the Canadians took full advantage of that. The other thing about it is that I think that Brett Kulak can be a great acquisition for a team. I just don't know if that's the type of defenseman that the Edmonton Oilers needed. He's a good transition defender, defenseman. But you know, if they were not to get better in front of the net, they needed a guy that could help protect the house very effectively. Numbers suggest that Kulak does, but it's up and down, right? There's a question of consistency, confidence that gets in the way when it comes to Kulak. And when you look at the New York Rangers who got Justin Braun for a third round pick, well, maybe that Braun would have been better suited for the Oilers. There was a market for Kulak. I'm sure that he would have been a great fit somewhere. But in Edmonton, I'm really not sure about that.
No, I think you're right. And I think the way Brett Kulak protects the house is by making sure the puck's just not in their zone. Like, you know, he's good at that. He's good at getting the puck through the three zones of the ice and making sure it's in the offensive zone more often than not. But when it is in the defensive zone is not when he's at his best. Like, Brett Kulak without the puck playing in the defensive zone, that's when he's least effective. With the puck on his stick in the defensive zone, he's very effective. But I would agree with you. I mean, they should have been a team that was in on Ben Chiarot, and they might have been. I mean, who knows? I mean, it's really, he's the kind of guy that I think that they could probably use.
Yeah.
Like Chiarot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I want to make you listen to an answer from Kulak from earlier, from a few days ago. I asked him if having new management and new coaching staff had changed his level, his consistency level, and his comfort level positively. Listen to what he had to say.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like you say, the fresh set of eyes is huge, and they see you just different than, you know, sometimes maybe old management, you've been around a few years and you go through a tough stretch, and then it's hard for them to erase that tough stretch out of the mind, even when you start playing good. And then, you know, if you have an off night or whatever, it's like, oh yeah, there that player is or whatever. But when you get the fresh eyes, it's good, because I feel like for me personally, I've just been developing over my career and trending up and just getting better and better. So I think, you know, a fresh set of eyes at different stages of your career can be really good.
So you see, Kulak doesn't name Marc Bergevin, but I have in mind the playoffs in the bubble in 2020, where Kulak probably played his best hockey ever alongside Jeff Petrie. It was really sensational against the Pittsburgh Penguins, for among others. And after, once the Canadians were out of the picture and were eliminated, Marc Bergevin went out and said, Brett, you know, you never know. Sometimes he can, when he's on his game, he can be a top four defenseman, and then he loses his confidence and you have to scratch him. And it really seems as though there was nothing that Kulak could do to really earn a durable trust from previous management. And now he felt as though he could get that with a new fresh set of eyes, either Gorton, Hughes, or St. Louis. So I think that he might get that also in Edmonton. But if he feels as though he doesn't have the benefit of the doubt, and that there's always this dark cloud that's over his head, well, he might then struggle with consistency. But if he is shown confidence, well, then he might show confidence also on the ice, and that makes him a totally different player.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe if it doesn't work out in Edmonton, he'd come back on a discount to Montreal based on how he felt about how he was being evaluated here. That remains to be seen. But regardless, as far as the Canadiens are concerned, they now have 2 second-round picks in the upcoming draft, thanks to Brett Kulak. And so when you look at their draft board, you got 2 firsts, 2 seconds, 3 thirds, 3 fourths. So that alone, just in the first 4 rounds, you're looking at 10 picks. And so with the number of prospects that are already in the system because of all the picks they've made in recent years, I find it very hard to believe that they're going to use all those picks. That's just my take on it for 2 reasons. A, because you do reach a saturation point in terms of how many prospects you have in the system. B, the scouting staff is not what either Jeff Gordon or Ken Hughes want it to eventually be. So if they can actually flip those picks for actual players that they can, or to move up in the draft, which now they have great ammunition, especially in the second round, if they want to move up in the second round using one of those third rounders to do it, they have 3 of them. There's opportunities there. And with the 2 second-round picks, they can move up in the first round if they want to move up from that Flames pick. They do have that opportunity. You know, it's obviously something that Mark Bergevin didn't believe in all that much, but I think the current group probably will, or does, for that matter. Ken Hughes was quite clear about it, in the sense that if you're not willing to move up in the draft, maybe you need new scouts or whatever. I forget what he said, but that's basically the gist of it, that it shouldn't be throwing darts at a dartboard. They have incredible ammunition to do a whole bunch of interesting things at the draft this year, other than drafting players, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at among the things that they can do, you mentioned trading up. I think that's a legitimate possibility. You look at the number of picks that they have in 2023. There's a lot less of them, although they'll have, for now, they got 2 first-round picks, but it's a lot more scarce after that. I think that one thing that they could do is just trade picks for next year's draft and basically slide those picks to a certain extent. I think that we should expect at least 1 or 2 transactions of that sort along the way. I suspect also that the Canadians might use some of those picks to facilitate a trade, because I wrote a column, on Monday night about how things had gone for the Canadians on trade deadline day. And I, as much as we can applaud Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes for the work that they've done, you look at the guys who were traded, Toffoli was the one guy with term who was probably the better bargain among the guys the veterans who could be traded. He was a fairly easy easy contract to move. Ben Chiarot, highly sought after. Brett Kulak, there was definitely a market for him. And if they chose to move Archery Lekkonen, they could do so if they were blown out of the water, which they ended up being. Now it gets touchy, because you have guys that are under contract for many years who are less performing. And if you want to achieve a certain financial sanity, some of those contracts will have to go. It's clear, crystal clear, that Jeff Petrie will probably be the first one to go. At least he's on the block for the summer. But I suspect that there will be more guys like that. And those picks might contribute or might help sweeten the pot for another team to take one of those contracts. So this is, you're right. There are many things that can be done with those picks.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, like, I think the only guy, there are a few guys who might need a sweetener to move. But yeah, when you talk about touchy, obviously Brendan Gallagher's kind of top of the list for touchy. I really don't get the sense that they want to move him. That's my personal opinion. I'm not basing that on any sourcing or anything. It's just kind of a feeling I have. But Joel Armia is a guy that they could probably use a sweetener to move. Mike Hoffman would be another one. Dvorak maybe falls into that category to a certain extent. Although I think most teams kind of recognize that he's better than what he's been this year. A lot of things sort of playing against him. But the interesting guy to me in terms of moving, just because of, you know, what's coming and is Edmondson. You know, he's got 2 years left on his deal. If he's able to show over this last month of the season that he's over whatever was ailing him, you know, everything that it ailed him this season, he's another guy that, if healthy, GMs are going to remember those playoffs and how he played last year in the playoffs. And that's going to stay with him. And it's not only those playoffs, it's the playoffs in St. Louis, you know, to a lesser extent, the playoffs in Carolina, but really those two runs in St. Louis and with Montreal give him pretty decent value, where you wouldn't even need to add a sweetener because his contract's quite reasonable for what he brings as a rugged playoff defenseman. So there are going to be opportunities to shed salary this offseason, but it really, you know, Weber's really the real linchpin here, Shea Weber. And, you know, they were obviously hoping to be able to move him to Arizona. It didn't work out. They got jumped in the queue by the Jets. Good on the Jets. But, you know, it is a situation that's going to need to be addressed in the offseason, because moving him would really change the landscape for the Canadiens, especially if Carey Price is healthy and playing. Like, as it stands right now, with all the players, I mean, cap friendly for next season has the Canadiens roster size at 14 and their cap hit at 79.8. So that includes Weber. So, you know, that obviously is not a real reflection of how much cap space they would have. But so if you add, you know, a shade under $2 million in cap space to add 9 players to the roster, you could add, you know, you could add Shea Weber's 7.8 million to that number, which still doesn't leave you with a whole lot of money to fill out your roster. Now, there will be young entry level players probably joining the roster. You got to think a defenseman or two will, maybe Gouley, maybe Barron, you know,
Jordan Harris.
Maybe Jordan Harris, who knows, but like one or two of those guys will. So that'll be some cheapness. But and then maybe Jesse Ylönen will make the team. That'll be less of a lower contract. And who knows what else. But I mean, it's really, they're not out of the woods in terms of fixing their financial situation for next year. They will need to re-sign Alexander Romanov. Now, he hasn't necessarily earned a huge raise, but I think he's showing right now that he's part of the future. And so if the Canadiens were forward thinking on this, getting him locked into a deal right now might not be such a bad idea. You know, like a 5 or 6 year deal at sort of a mid-range cap number that would take him to basically to unrestricted free agency, but you would get him at a good number for, you know, maybe buy 1 or 2 years of UFA and get him at a bit of a discount if he continues on the swing he's doing. But in order to do something like that, they still need to create cap space, like, and a significant amount of it, you know? And so, I'm not quite sure how they're going to go about doing that other than trading Shea Weber.
But it shows you how just signing Lehkonen for next year would have been a problem. See,
100%.
You
100%.
Signing Lehkonen at $3.5 million is just, if you don't, that's why I always connected Joel Armia's deal with Lehkonen. If you wanted to keep Lehkonen, you would have to move Armia. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's just for next year. He might be even more costly once he reaches UFA status. So, yeah, there's going to be the tougher contracts are going to be moved this summer, and there's going to be likely Weber, likely Petrie, but beyond that, there will need to be a couple more. They're not going to trade them all. I think, you know, you mentioned Mike Hoffman. I get the feeling that they're going to hold on to him and try to find some sort of use for this guy. Christian Dvorak, let's see how he fares under Martin Saint-Louis until the end of the season. But I feel if they're not drafting a guy, a centerman that could, you know, that could jump in and play in the NHL as soon as next season,
I don't see anybody in-house who would be a better centerman than Dvorak, named, you know, whether you look at, mm-hmm. at Rem Pitlick, Laurent Dauphin, Ryan Poehling, Jake Evans. Ultimately, none of those guys yet. I say yet when thinking about Poehling, but even then, I don't think that any of those guys is a superior player at this point to Dvorak or can do as much on the ice. He's not the perfect player. He's not the guy with the most pace, but he would still have a fit with this mm-hmm. team. But Armia, maybe Gallagher, for sure Petrie, and you know, who knows, maybe one of the goalies too, depending on Carey's health and what they choose to do.
Yeah.
There's still plenty of movement that
will think be. I think Jonathan Drouin could be a candidate too to be moved in the offseason. He's only got 1 year left. It's a big number at 5.5 for what he's brought, but he was one of the only ones who was actually producing under Dom Ducharme. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he was before he got hurt, he was being effective. You know, he's an effective player. So I think this last month of the season is going to be big for the Canadiens in that sense. And that's kind of the beauty of having Martin St-Louis around and having the team buy into what he's doing and having them be more competitive and actually winning a few games, is that some of these players can show their best versions of themselves to set up the offseason for the Canadiens, because they do need to restructure their whole salary scheme here. And it's not going to be easy if everyone's playing like crap, you know, like they really need some production out of, and I think if Drouin shows himself to be effective, you know, who knows? I think he could wind up maybe on a different team in the off season because he doesn't have much term left. It makes him a more attractive gamble, you know, because mm-hmm. so there are options there.
Yeah. You see Drouin, I see him. If he gets the St. Louis bump, like so many of his teammates, and plays better till the end of the season, I think that they'll try to double down on that and say, well, let's see what he can do next year. And if they have to shed many contracts that they don't expect to be necessarily a playoff team next year, well, if he plays well next year, he could become an interesting piece at the trade deadline next year.
Uh-huh.
And if he was to play good hockey in the next calendar year, well, what you would get for him at the trade deadline is probably more than what you would get for him in the summer. For a guy who's got only 1 year left, he's less part of the problem than a guy that still has 2 or 3 years left on his deal.
I agree with you. The thing is that there's a reality between what we would do and what it sounds like this team is going to do. And for this team to be active in free agency this offseason, which, listen, Ken Hughes talked to us about it and did not discount the possibility of going after some good free agents. Yes, he suggested that, you know, there's some bargains to be had if you let free agency go for a few days, but he also wasn't shy talking about, you know, there's some good players available and we're going to be interested in those good players. And so if they do want to be active in free agency, those are the types of decisions that are going to have to be made. And there's some urgency to it. Yes. I personally would follow the plan that you just laid out for Jonathan Drouin if he plays well from now till the end of the season. But if the Canadiens want to be an active player in free agency, they're going to have to make some decisions at the draft. Like that's just mm-hmm. That's just a fact. Like some guys will have to go if they hope to do anything in free agency. So, and that's to me what the fascinating part about what this offseason is going to look like for the Canadiens is that, you know, everyone talks about the famous letter that the Rangers sent out to their fans and how they bought into the rebuild and all that. But the Rangers were quite active in free agency. Obviously, their best player was a free agent. And that's, you know, not necessarily what's going to happen in Montreal. You're not going to have an Artemi Panarin, you know, insisting to play for the Montreal Canadiens and no one else. But, you know, the Rangers didn't do it on drafting and developing alone. Far from it. They made a lot of shrewd trades. They made free agent signings. They did a lot of different things that did not solely depend on drafting and development. And quite frankly, their draft and development has had almost no impact, like very minimal impact on how good they are right now. You know, I mean, Shesterkin obviously goes without saying. But, you know, goalies are goalies, and good on them. They found a good one. But, you know, other than Hedl.
It's a 2014 pick also. It's not
24. It's not, yeah, exactly. It predates the letter.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than Hedl, and recently Lafreniere is playing better, but, you know, it's not any of their recent draft picks that are really driving what's going on right now. You know, like Adam Fox trade, Panarin free agent signing, Trouba trade, you know, I mean, Keandre Miller is a draft pick. They've made some decent draft picks, but it's if you look at the Rangers and how they've built themselves back up, it was not purely draft and develop, and I don't think it's going to be purely draft and develop in Montreal either.
No, that's a good point. You mentioned Joel Edmondson. To me, Joel Edmondson is a keeper. I expect him to, if he's not the captain next year, he's going to be like first assistant.
Yeah.
You know, I think that he's going to have a mentor role on this team that's very significant. And you need some established guys, you know. And to me, having Edmondson and Savard, you don't need to have superstars necessarily, but you need to have guys that show the young players how to be pros, how to, you know, handle the ups and downs of the season, how to go about their business. And he's a great guy for that. And
yeah, I think especially if they're going to be incorporating young defensemen, into the, which I think they will. I really do. Just before we go, I'd be interested to hear your take on what to do with Romanov. It's really, I think, an interesting, somewhat of a dilemma for them, in the sense that, so let's assume they have the cap space to extend him long term,
right?
Let's just assume that.
I
don't quite know how they're going to do that. But if they do,
right,
what do you do with him? Do you bridge him? Do you go long term? Like, what's your read on that?
Well, I think that a longer term would be preferable. But I wonder if, you know, how Arturi Lehkonen kept betting on himself, going into short term contracts after short term contract, because he knew that deep down there was more offense to him than the statistics showed. I wonder if, in his own way, Alexander Romanov won't be thinking the same. That once he's fully adapted to the NHL level and as displayed his main assets, he'll want to go out there showing that he's got more offense than what we've seen so far from him. And if it's what he thinks he can bring more, then he might be the one not necessarily looking for a long-term deal. Because a guy with this sort of effectiveness who doesn't really put up points, there's a limited number of what he can get. But personally, his style of play, the energy that he has, the durability that he seems to have, and the fact that he seems to only get better, makes him a blue chip in my mind. So this is a guy that, I don't know, if the Canadians were to sign him long term, they would probably have, you know, you look at it, let's say a veteran like Chris Tanev, right, who could maybe be a guy who down the road could become a good comparable for him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as a UFA, he signed for $4.5 million a year for 4 years. So you sign him on his second deal. I'm not sure he would not get to $4 million, but you bring down the AAV. That's a good strategy, and I think he's a blue chip. So that's where I would stand. But it's such a big if to see, well, if the Canadians manage to clear enough cap space to enable themselves to sign this guy long term, because they might have to bridge him just because that's what they can afford.
Yeah. No, 100%. But it's an interesting. It's an interesting dilemma for them, because it's really hard to find an appropriate number there. Like Chris Tanev is, I think, a really good example, but he's so much older than him, right? I mean, it's so...
Yeah.
It's like
sure.
The ceiling on Romanov is not yet known. Like, it's really... He has tools that would suggest that there's more to his game once he's able to unlock it. How do you put a number on that? Like, it's so... Like, you know, my initial thought is, if you could get him to sign a six-year deal at $5 million a year, you're buying 2 years of UFA. 2 years of UFA. I don't know. It seems like a reasonable number for a guy that you think is going to play in your top four for those 6 years. Paying a top four defenseman $5 million a year is not unreasonable. It's more than he's worth right now, but down the road, but by the end of that contract, I think that might risk being a bargain. But how do you number that?
I don't see $5 million being a bargain for Alexander. I love the guy. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I love the guy, but there has to be some offense that comes with that when you pay a guy like that much money, and especially when he's not even arbitration eligible. So it's,
No, this would be a bet. This would be an evaluation bet.
Right.
And so,
I mean, he's getting more and more confident with the puck. I think that when he chooses to carry it outside of his own zone, he's getting better at it. He's got great mobility, and that could translate into him being able to provide more offense.
He sees the ice so well. That's kind of my thing with him. Mm-hmm. Is that his vision on the ice is really exceptional. That pass he made on that give and go with David Savard the other night was really, that was a heady play. You know, like that was something, I don't know if they talked about that. I don't know if that was a set play, but it was a great pass, you know, and really showed his comfort level increasing. And so I don't know. I think it's an interesting question. Listen, I don't necessarily disagree with you that $5 million is too high, but I'm thinking of it from his perspective. Like how do you convince him to sign into his UFA years? What number does that take? It's going to take somewhat of an overpay and somewhat of a gamble and say that, well, we think you'll be worth more than this, so we're going to give you this. I don't know what that number is. It's tough to say. Like, I don't think 6 years times 4 million gets it done. Like, if I'm Alexander Romanov, I don't think I'm signing that.
Okay.
That's just my point of view, because for exactly the reason that you stated, you know, that if he thinks that he has more in him, why would he lock himself into a number that might make him severely underpaid if that offense ever gets unlocked in him, right? So it's tricky. I don't know. But the way he's played, and admittedly I've missed the last 2 weeks, but I've been reading and looking at his ice time, and you know, especially
he's the guy who plays the most. Basically, de facto, he's their number one defenseman, just that's purely based on ice time.
And so,
which is crazy.
So what do you do? But that's it. But like, what do you do? He's an RFA.
Yeah.
You have an opportunity to lock him in at a number that could turn out to be very favorable to your team. But in the short term, it won't be. In the short term, it's going to look crazy. Even if they sign him at $4 million a year for let's say 4 years, you know, it's which wouldn't make any sense. But it's you know, it's something between a bridge and a full-blown second year max contract, like Suzuki got, is a really, really difficult number to figure out with that guy. Because even if the offense isn't unlocked, if he is a 23 minute a game defenseman from now on, that in and of itself has a certain value. Not $5 million, I agree with you, but it has significant value at that age.
Absolutely.
A lot of value.
Yeah,
so I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do there.
No, and I mean, I won't go too far into this, but I'm just thinking also, and that goes for Romanov, but also for any Russian players whose contract is up. How will the geopolitical landscape affect these guys? And say, well, in certain cases, they might be thinking, you know what, having more security at this point, knowing that I've got guaranteed money, I'm here for a long time, I know what to expect, and at least in a world full of insecurity, at least I've got my own.
Mm-hmm.
You might have guys that will think that way.
Yeah, that's possible.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
It's not something that's being discussed a great deal at this point, because there's still 15 plus games in the season, and there are so many contracts that are to be moved, but this is going to be a big topic for the Canadiens. There's no doubt about it.
I think so.
And they'll probably want to sign Caulfield to his second deal as soon as they can also. So there's that too. You know, so.
Yeah. I mean, they do have some time on that, but yeah, that will be an issue. But yeah, I mean, listen, it's Caulfield, Suzuki, Romanov, and all the other guys that are yet to come. I mean, this is the core, right? I mean, that's the new core of this team is going to be that. And so, do you identify that core like Suzuki's locked up? Do you lock up their core or do you not? And now the first opportunity to do it is with this guy. And he's shown over the course of this season that the curve is becoming steeper on an upward trajectory the further along the season goes. And at some point, you know, a team has to make an evaluation and take a risk, much like Mark Bergevin did with Nick Suzuki, you know? And it wasn't looking like a great gamble for a while this season, right? Like first half of the year, like, yeesh, that's a $7.9 million contract extension kicks in next year and this doesn't look good, but now it looks great. You know, he's been fantastic ever since the coaching change. So it's, you know, you got to make decisions. And
they see him as a bona fide number one centerman too. And so, yeah. And you know, I think that when we say the re-whatever, rebuilding, retool, reset, I think that in their eyes, they're flexible with the how long it would take for their ideas, their blueprint to be achieved. And that would be likely influenced by the development of their younger players. So if they feel as though they've got guys who are accelerating the process just because of where they are and how impactful they've become, i.e. Suzuki and Caulfield, but you could certainly add Romanov to that with the amount of ice time that he's taking, then for sure you lock up that core, you build around them because they're ready now to be impactful players and to help you win now. It's not just projections. It's becoming a reality right now. So I think that they're going to, as quickly as they can, but there's going to be a switch and focus on those guys and see how can they surround them better and add some ammunition. But there's the first order of business is to clear some cap space. There's just no two ways around it.
Yeah, so they should get on that.
That's it.
Yeah, go ahead and do that, guys. So we will leave that to Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes. Luckily that's not our problem, but yeah, it's I think what's interesting about the Canadiens is that the last month of the season, despite the fact that they're completely out of it, is highly relevant for many reasons, and I think we touched on a lot of them today. There's a lot to pay attention to with this team, even though they are quite literally playing out the string for the rest of the season. There's a lot at stake. There's a lot of decisions to be made. And the way these guys play over these final, this final month and a half or a month, like 5 or 6 weeks that are left, is going to determine a lot. And it's going to determine the trade value of some of these guys in the off season. You know, so a lot of the decisions that are going to be made. So it's going to be pretty fascinating to follow along. So even though the trade deadline's behind us, I feel like there's still a lot of very interesting storylines to keep track of over the rest of the year.
Yeah, for sure. Carey Price likely coming back at some point before the end of the season. That looks good for now, though. Mm-hmm. So that's surely going to be one of the storylines that you're talking about. Thanks a lot, Arpin. Thank you so much, everybody, for being with us today on The Athletic Support. We'll be back next Wednesday in French with Le Sport Athletic. In the meantime, if you have not subscribed to The Athletic yet, well, what are you waiting for? If I'm not mistaken, we still have our offer for the first 6 months of your for new subscribers. The first 6 months of your subscription can be gotten for only $1 per month. So that's a great deal. So make sure you just click on any of our articles, any of our links, and you can subscribe to the Athletic that way.
You can also go to theathletic.com/athletic support. You will always get any promotion that is on will be available through that link for our listeners. So theathletic.com, and even when a promotion is not on, there is still a discounted offer on that link. So you go to theathletic.com/athletic support, and you can subscribe that way as well.
There you go. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. And Arpin, I'm very happy to have you back.
It's good to be back, man.
Yeah. All right. Bye.